Gary Roost, my first question to you. If you answer in a particular way, we'll leave everyone bamboozled. And that might be a good place to leave them. Mm. Or if not, it might bring them closer to coming to see your play at the Fringe, which is called...
Warhol Bullet Karma.
Now, the reason I've asked that is I would like you to build me a bridge from Francis Bacon to Andy Warhol.
Very good question, as always. Well... That is an interesting one. It was something that someone suggested to me before I came to Edinburgh to do Popehead. But it was put in a very different context of how I could do it. And I just became fascinated by the persona of him. But it took me a few years to work out how I could actually do this, because there was various characters that were going to come into it. I'm not an impersonator. I embody the characters. And
I suppose also what I'm asking then is, there's a moment in your life where you're identified with and you're immersed in a character that you played a lot, Francis Bacon. Mm. Google him if you've never heard of him, young people. And then somehow there's some moment in time, and now there's this moment in time, and a bunch of things happen, that the guy I'm looking at is about to look very different on stage and be Andy Warhol. Can you see a thread that joins them?
They're very different people. Yes. And those who've seen the show already say that. They are very different shows.
So in that, do you think now you needed to be someone very different, having played that first character for such a long time?
Yes, but I wanted some kind of theme, and it seemed natural to stay within an artist area, and Andy Warhol and Francis Bacon, polar opposites, and they actually, I don't think they liked each other's work. They respected each other, but they didn't like each other's work. I think they were both quite candid about that. But Andy is very still, and Francis was very animated and invigorating.
Okay, that suggests then there's a theatre challenge for you to play these different people.
Well, I think with Andy Warhol, a friend of mine in Australia, who is a well-respected reviewer, he said to me, you have to remember that you're tapping into a very rich period of time and of great historic value not just in the art world, but you know, in the history of man with Andy Warhol. He said it's a very challenging thing to put a theatrical piece together, let alone a one-man show, and he's right. It is a big challenge. It's not an easy show to pull off.
I was watching him on YouTube last week. I think it lasted half an hour, and he was just eating a hamburger. That's very different from Francis Bacon.
Yeah, I mean, commercial artist, unashamed commercial artist. He was introduced to fine art, but he knew it wasn't going to work for him. And it was the cutthroat world of commercial art that was for him. That's part of the theme of the show, is the hard-nosed corporate aspect of it. He was a corporate, hard-nosed person.
But we're still buying his stuff.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. You know, he would say, get it done and let others decide if it's good or bad. It was repeating the ideas on silk screens. It was suggested by a friend of his that, hey, you like money, so you should paint money. You should also paint something that everybody recognises. Like a can of soup. And it was that started it. But
so you hang your Francis Bacon puppet up on the wall of life. You might bring him down, you might not. And then Andy Warhol is the name in your head. And you're going to play him. And so there's a show to write. And there's a character to inhabit. And I always like to believe, and there's a possibility of not doing it at any moment too. But you are here. So for people that don't know, what was that process from the moment of that name appearing in your head and a decision to play him? How does that then get turned into the show we're going to see?
I had to do a lot of thinking about this, but I went to an evening, an Andy Warhol evening last year, and everybody was dressing up. It was celebrating him, and there was a gentleman called Nigel Holland, who was a sound designer for Braveheart. He and I chatted about Andy Warhol. He actually met him, and he had very strong views about him, which are in the play, not as him, but just the ethos of his views. It was quite a powerful conversation, and we were going to collaborate on this. I mean, sadly, he was attacked, assaulted, and now he's brain damaged. So I wanted to find a way of putting his message into the show because it was so powerful, and I've found a way of doing that. You can only do it by research and talking to people who knew or were fans of Warhol. And so, you know, you've got to look far and wide, and then you've got to find out, as I mentioned earlier, how are you going to put all these characters into this, because it was very different from playing Bacon. I mean, that was difficult enough, but this was harder because everyone involved in Andy Warhol's life is iconic, practically.
So you sort of, and it's almost ironically, you have to pull a curtain of commercialism aside and get to whatever's behind it.
Yeah, so I always like, with my shows, it's a psychological profile. It's trying to look inside the person, or a confessional, or a closure, or putting up a brick wall. So I try and do all of those things and get... There are visitors that come to the factory or lived or died in the factory, and they give a view on him. But hopefully it's a balanced view. That's what I've tried to do, but I've tried to be very honest with it as well.
But also, you know, researching plays isn't only about observation, it's about making it up too, isn't it?
Yeah, you've got to take some theatrical license, which I do, but it's only sprinklings of theatrical license. And some of the things I say, you know, I think so far people would have, you know, there's been no complaints about that. But you know, you can't be truthful about everything, because some of those people are still alive and that were involved in his life. And there are people out there that care very much about what you do say about him. So you've got to get a balanced view. And I'm never controversial for the sake of it. It's a big mistake.
But your Bacon as well, there is a documentary element. But I would say laid thick on top is something else that is... It's more than theatre, isn't it? I'm going to analyse you. It's Gary Roost.
Well, I mean, as a writer, you have to be making a comment.
No, but you're a bit of a countercultural soul, aren't you?
Possibly, yeah, but I'm dealing with people, great artists, people who made great achievements, and so I've always got great respect for that. And I'll hold a personal view about it, personally. You know, I don't think either of them would have been my sort of person, but I don't think I would have been their sort of person either.
I mean, I was interested in this with acting in solo shows where you portray an icon. How much of your skin has to come off so that you can step raw into the skin of a character you're playing? And how much of it do you go, no, that's the very raw material I need to play this character?
Very interesting question, that one. I mean, a lot of it for me is... It's an instinctive thing. Because people have said to me, well, you embody the character... That is something that is very organic, that is almost unexplainable. I really don't know how I would describe that, but I find when I'm playing Francis and when I, you know, I might be having a cup of tea, that he does filter in, he comes in. And Andy is starting to come into my life now as well in very interesting ways. So it's all very subtle.
I sometimes wonder if it's also the difference. I've seen a couple of Andy Warhols over the years and quite a few other icons. And for me, the difference between I enjoyed that to no, that's with me now, is it goes beyond a tribute band act.
Well, yeah. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, it's not about doing impersonations. It's about embodying. And and being that character. And it's just allowing it to take you over. Obviously not completely, but to allow yourself to be immersed in it, to enjoy it, to find the humour as well, to find all the positive things out of it, because you're entertaining an audience. You don't want to end up in your boots, you know.
Do you think you've found out anything about him that no one else knows?
No, I don't think so. I think it's all there. I think, you know, those that have met Andy Warhol, I think people who have met anyone like that, or Francis Bacon, they claim some kind of ownership when they actually didn't really know them, but they met them. And then there are those who really truly knew them, and they, you know, they're truthful and they're relaxed about how they talk about them. But I don't think I've discovered anything that anybody doesn't know. But you'll always find somebody who didn't know that Valerie Solanas shot him and why. It's a very sad story, really.
Would he be disappointed with the Edinburgh Fringe?
I don't know. I don't think he would be disappointed.
They're claiming this year it's Into the Unknown. That's the theme.
The Fringe?
Yeah.
I mean, but what's fringe? I mean, I'm not sure people understand. I mean, I don't know if the word is really respected, quite honestly, because you can see shows that it's fringe. And sometimes they can be criticised for that. And then production values. There seems to be a confusion of production values at the Fringe, I think.
Do you think he'd find his factory more on the internet?
Probably these days, yeah. I think if he did exist in these times, I think he would have revelled in that. But, you know, when you do look at the factory, it's an incredible thing that happened. It would never happen today. It just couldn't happen in the same
Everyone
way.
Everyone would claim they're a factory, and the very claiming of it means they're probably not.
Yeah. It's been done, hasn't it? And it was an incredible time, I think, in history. The things that they achieved with Velvet Underground and the meeting of David Bowie and snubbing him, Lou Reed, the impact that he had on him, Edie Sedgwick, that's very sad. And also the drag queens of the time, because there was a lot of working class guys from the Bronx. They were all drag queens, but working class.
He'd probably think Elon Musk was an arsehole, wouldn't he?
I don't know. Who's he?
The guy that, you know, is going to send us to Mars and create Hyperloop. You know, this is the age of invention now. You know, that's not what they were about, is it?
No. It was about making art and trying to get away with it. Get things done and let others decide if it's good or bad.
Before the show, what's your ritual? You know, how do you, in your own way, put the wig and the powder on?
Yes, well, you know, I mean, I always go through parts of the script. I always run it. I always prepare myself the best way that I can. Because, you know, being on stage for an hour or 50 minutes, it's a tough call for anyone.
But is there a way of Warholizing yourself? Or does that happen as you get on stage?
I don't know. It's just something that just becomes part of me. Obviously there's a voice, and there is, you know, the character becomes more and more embedded in you as you go along. So it's just about getting that adrenaline going a lot of the time. And really preparing yourself, get the concentration going, and then just do it. Get involved in it, and just let it happen. Relax. You've done the hard work in rehearsal. Try not to think too much about what you're doing, because once you start analysing, that's the dangerous thing. Because you can do that. You can play games with yourself on stage, especially in a solo show. But you must stop that. Concentrate and get the job done. Work with the audience if they're responding. Enjoy it.
I'm still delighting in the fact you don't know who Elon Musk is. Makes your show even more worth seeing. But there will be people up here who may never actually have heard of Andy Warhol, and there'll be people that are going because it's about Andy Warhol. let's just go to the more interesting audience for you, which is some 17 or 18 year olds who haven't even Googled him, and they come in, so they're going to get an encounter with this person for the first time in their 2018 post-millennial lives. What are they going to meet without any of the baggage?
Well, they're going to meet someone who doesn't apologise for who they are, but opens up, talks about, you know, art, talks about life, and also analyses death, and who gave people a platform, artists, and they sadly perished, and so there was a selfish element to him. So it's showing a really multifaceted human being that had emotions but also didn't, and it's the corporate beast, the training of the commercial artist that created that. But then there are those, you know, who loved it.
When I write for Fringe Review, I actually would say it's not always easy, but it's fun to do. Is playing Andy Warhol fun to do?
Yes, it is a fun show. It's a big ask, because it's hey, I'm going to play Andy Warhol, so you've got to deliver. But it is fun, and you know, it's a powerful story, and people who've seen it said they found it to be powerful. I don't actually feel that way, you know, because I'm immersed in it. And but it's very interesting to hear them say that. And so I felt when I was doing Bacon that, you know, it's a powerful character. However, one or two people who've seen both shows said, oh, this is more powerful. There's a much more powerful impact, because I think it's more chronological, and there really is a strong message throughout it. And it's funny, and it's dark, and it's dramatic, and it's an interesting story. People have been intrigued so far. That's the feedback I've had so far from the previews that I've done.
Gary Ruth, thanks for talking to Fringe Review.